My name is Nicole Sweeney.
I am Nicole Sweeney.
My name is Maddie Ness. Sorry, it tripped me up.
Okay, I'll do it again. Hello and welcome to Snark Squad Pod, a media podcast full of friendship, feelings, and snark. I'm Nicole Sweeney.
My name is Maddie Ness.
And I am Jocelyn. My YouTube channel is Yogi with a Book, and I'm also on Twitter at Jossaraptor.
Today we invited Jocelyn to talk to us about His Dark Materials Season 2, which I don't think maybe we did this one other time, kind of, where we came back to revisit a show in a second season.
A second season?
I know, a crazy talk. But here we are, and it is my job to recap what happened in this season. It was a lot, so I'm going to do my very best. We start with Lyra arriving in Chittagatsi, which is the world that is kind of between all of the worlds, and there she promptly meets Will, who is appropriately shocked at how this girl has a talking animal who follows her around everywhere. They kind of compare notes about their own worlds and learn that Chittagatsi is mostly deserted. There are some children left there, but all of the adults have left because of something called specters, which are basically like dementors. I'm sorry, I know that specters came first, but they're basically like dementors. And the specters only attack adults, tying them to dust that also only settles on adults. Meanwhile, the witches are preparing for war. Mrs. Coulter has captured a witch and is interrogating her about the prophecy that concerns Lyra. But before the witch gives away anything, she's mercy killed by Ruta Scotti, who is the queen of the witches, who also mortally wounds the cardinal of the magisterium. Elsewhere, Lee Scoresby is tasked with finding Grumman. Will and Lyra decide that they have to go to Will's world for separate missions. Will's going to check up on his mom, and Lyra's going to find out more about dust. The alethiometer directs Lyra to Mary Malone, who is a physicist researching dark matter. Lyra demonstrates how the alethiometer works for her, and Mary shows Lyra her research, including a computer they've programmed to talk to dark matter, aka dust. Mrs. Coulter plots with Father MacPhail to make sure the cardinal dies, like really dies, so MacPhail can be the new cardinal. In order to win votes and curry favor, MacPhail bombs the witches' territories. He's elected as cardinal, and Miss Coulter is like, cool, now I'm going to blackmail you, goodbye. Over with Lee, as he's trying to find more information about Grumman, he kills a magisterium agent in self-defense and is arrested. Mrs. Coulter hears of his arrest and visits him, and they have feelings about bad childhoods and Lyra being the best. And she frees him. She helps free him so that he can continue to help protect Lyra. The alethiometer tells Lyra that she has to help Will with his quest, but instead, and despite all the danger, Lyra heads back to Will's world again to meet with Mary Malone. There, Boreal's cops, the ones that he's working with, find Lyra, but with Mary's help, she gets away, only to run into Boreal himself. And he offers to give her a ride. Our poor child is a little panicked. She gets in the car. We can't judge her too much. When she gets out of the car, she realizes that the alethiometer is missing from her bag. Lyra and Will later find Boreal, and he agrees to return the alethiometer if they retrieve a very special knife for him. A very helpful and weirdly placed narration tells us all about the knife, called the Subtle Knife, which can essentially cut doors between worlds. Lyra and Will go up to the Tower of Angels to retrieve the knife. The knife bearer is up there. He's being attacked by a young man, and Will fights this guy and ends up having two of his fingers cut off by the knife. After Will wins the fight, the old knife bearer tells him that Will is now the new knife bearer and teaches him how to wield the knife and how to open and close portals. Lee finds Grumman, who is John Perry, Will's father, and has given himself the cool nickname Jopery. Jopery tells Lee to take him to find the knife bearer, and Lee agrees to do so as long as Lyra is under the protection of the knife. Mrs. Coulter links up with Boreal to head to Will's Oxford and wait for Will and Lyra there. Lyra arrives at Boreal's house, distracting him while Will cuts into the house to take back the alethiometer. He's not expecting Mrs. Coulter, though, so there's a bit of a showdown and a fight, but ultimately the kids get away with the alethiometer. All through this, Mary has been trying to talk to Dust on her own, and the Dust tells her that they are actually angels, and she needs to travel to another world to help Lyra and Will. She does her best to follow the Angel Dust directions and also finds herself in Chittagatsi, There she finds two characters that I have not mentioned yet, two little girls. Paola is one, and then the other is the Bear Princess from Game of Thrones. Yes. they have such a touching moment. This has nothing to do with the recap, but she helps them find their parents before continuing on her own mission. Mrs. Coulter and Boreal also enter Chittagatsi, but Boreal is like, be careful, there are specters here, and they attack adults. Coulter isn't scared, though, because she knows she can figure out how to master them, and she does, essentially by repressing all of her humanity. Boreal is impressed and makes a little move on Coulter, who pretends to be into it, but mostly so she can poison his drink and kill him. Lee and Jopuri make it to Chittagatse as well, getting closer and closer to their children, Will and Lyra. Unfortunately, they encounter a heck ton of Magisterium agents, and Lee has to stay behind and fight them off, while Jopuri gets to go on and meet the Knife Bearer. Lee calls on Serafina to help him, but then he's mortally wounded and dies. Will leaves Lyra sleeping to go find his dad. He doesn't know it's his dad. He's just been having these like weird, like vision-y things. And they have this tense and emotional reunion. And John tells his son that he has to get the knife to Azrael because it's the only weapon that will work against the authority. Like the whole thing this whole time is that there's this building war against the authority on one side and then like Azrael on the other side. Unfortunately, the reunion is cut short when a Magisterium agent shoots Jopuri, and he also dies. Mrs. Coulter finds Lyra and kidnaps her to keep her safe, having found out earlier that the prophecy says that Lyra is Eve, and Mrs. Coulter interprets this as meaning that she must keep Lyra from falling and also put her into a trunk. The end.
Amazing. So my one, like, I don't know, addendum, I guess, to that synopsis is that this season was truncated by one episode because of the pandemic. There was supposed to be an extra episode basically just following Azrael. So that like random shot of him at the end of the season off alone presumably would have had more context. Also, I guess it maybe would have been the finale episode. So I don't know. I'm sure that we will talk more about how or where that like could have fit in. But I want to put that out there as a in terms of like thinking about what happened in this season is that it's missing an episode. But before we get into all of our feelings about it, we're going to start where we always start and ask, did you like it? Jocelyn.
I did.
I also did a fair amount. I think that as we talk, I'll probably find things to say like, oh yeah, maybe that wasn't the best or that wasn't the best. But the entire time I was watching it, all I had was hard eyes. So.
Yeah. So 3 for 3 on hard eyes. I also loved basically my entire viewing experience. I have a couple small things that we'll talk about, but I guess we should start with Lyra and Will. And they're, like, I think last time we maybe talked about them a little bit more separate, but now that they are well and truly a unit, I think it makes more sense to actually start with their, like, their dynamic and their relationship rather than them as individual characters, because that is, like, that's the fundamental change of this season, is that they are no longer alone and they now have each other. They're a little duo.
I loved them. My first note of just the season is just Will and Lyra with like 8 exclamation points because I was so excited that they finally get to interact. And I was wondering how their chemistry would work since, like you said, they haven't really been on screen together, not throughout the entire first season. Mm-hmm. But I love the moments, especially in the very first episode, of them like figuring out each other. And like there was one point where Lyra's just like, oh, so your world's like my world with all the words mixed up. And I was like, this is so cute and wholesome, this adorable like getting to know each other moment. It was so good.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that it made me think a lot about the first season. I rewatched the whole first season before jumping into the second one. And so I was thinking a lot about like the dynamics of the first season and the fact that they sped up from an adaptation standpoint. They kind of sped us up here and introduced us to Will earlier in the TV series. So I think that whether or not you like it in the first season, it pays off so much in the second season because I was already so invested in Will and so invested in Lyra that it gave it just so much space to become about their dynamics. We weren't learning a new character. We loved each of them separately. And then to see them come together, it just was so easy to root for them immediately as a unit. And I thought that the two actors had a really great dynamic and chemistry. And you could see them, like Jocelyn was saying, kind of circling around each other a little bit at first, learning about each other, making mistakes, and then ultimately getting to the end where they're, you know, like, I trust you, I will protect you with my life, and yes. like all of these grand gestures and grand like proclamations. But by that point, like, you're in it, right? I believed every single word that they yes. are each other's best friends, and like, this is a friendship like that was like born in the fire, you know, by trial of fire. And so by the time that you get there, I don't know, I just believed it so much. So I love them. And knowing where we're going, I'm already crying.
Yes. Yeah, I also rewatched the first season before starting the second season. And like, I totally agree that it really, really pays off going into this season that we already know who Will is, and that we really like know him in reference to Lyra too. Like, something that I did not really notice as much on first watch, but like that really stood out to me rewatching the first season to prepare for the second season, is the ways in which, like, we see Lyra going through all of this incredibly horrifying stuff in like the big fantasy epic way. And at the same time, we're watching Will go through horrible stuff in a very real world kind of way. And like, you know, without magic, without, you know, any of that. And like, they expand. So Will wanting to take up his father's mantle is a book thing. They expanded that to an actual conversation that he has with his mother in the first season, where she's like, this world is broken. And like, having that happen, as we are also seeing that Lyra's world is extremely broken, like that just does so much work, so that once we now see them together, it is, yeah, I'm like all in, totally root for them. I love that they, as a, my book reader heart loves that they kept in the bit where Lyra asks the alethiometer about Will and she decides she can trust him because he's a murderer. I don't know if that makes as much sense in the context of the show when we don't get to hear all of her thoughts. Like, the show just has her kind of be like, okay, cool, he's a murderer.
Well, she said like care. Yorick though, so that's
good kind. That's true.
Yeah.
They did give it that context. I mean, I didn't care. I supported it anyway. I will say, it is to me the biggest weakness of the second season that they do not get more screen time. Like, my number one complaint is that we spent too, like, I appreciate the world building of adding all of the adult politics, but like, it is so central to the series, this idea that, like, this is a part of the books too, that, you know, the adults are doing this bit, these big, you know, universe upending things, but what we're really interested in, what we're really invested in, is the journey that these two children go on, and like, letting all of that other stuff happen kind of in the background of their journey. There were some sections that basically any adult section that didn't include Mrs. Coulter, hard pass, was not interested. They can all go. Any scene like that, any scene without Ruth Wilson, I'm not interested. But yeah, I don't know. I wanted a little bit more of them than we got, but I loved absolutely every minute of Lyra and Will that we did get.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that we'll probably, I don't know if I'm bringing it up now or we'll talk about it eventually, like the thematic stuff, especially because Lyra and Will both have these like parent things that are going on. Mm-hmm. And we get so much into this idea of both Asriel and Jopari like being like, I left you, but for the good of the world. And how that to a child is like, what are they supposed to understand by that? And so the book itself kind of takes from that and says, well, these men left their children to go do big things, but the actual story is that the children will do the bigger things, right? That the whole thing hinges on them. So I agree that I wish we would have had that sense more in the story, that yes, all of these adults are doing their own thing, but really what we're here for and what everybody is like sort of riding on is are the two kids. And I think that the season does pay it lip service, because at every turn, everybody's like, Lyra's the one. She's so important. Protect the child. Find Lyra. And so everybody's saying it, but I'm watching you say it. I want to be with Lyra.
Yeah, I'm so. Like, yes, let the cameraman find Lyra.
And also, Lee Scoresby forgave John Perry way too fast. Absolutely way too fast. I was like, no.
Yes.
You do not get off that easily, sir. You keep your tears.
They also, they made him worse. Like, this version of that man feels worse.
Which I
don't actually have a problem with. I'm okay with that because of everything that Mari just said about the ways in which they're a bit of a mirror, you know, that they both have their, both of their dads are on their, you know, their big missions to save the world and like completely abandon their children in the process. And anybody who's listened to our previous His Dark Materials episodes will hear me yell that I am president of the Fuck Lord Asriel club. So I appreciate making him worse because it highlights that Asriel sucks too. However, yeah. I totally agree that he forgave him too quickly, and that whole explanation of the way that played out was weird. And also, now that we're talking about him, I felt like we were going to get to him later, but since we're at him already, I'm going to introduce the first item from my petty grievance corner. The fucking nickname. Okay. All right. Listen, I hate myself a little bit already for all of the times that I'm going to be like, well, in the books. However, in the books, the point of that nickname is he's like living with this tribe. I actually don't really remember the details of where, like, the people that he's with, but he's with other people. The reason that he is called that is because these people misheard his name, which is his actual name, which is Joe Perry. Like, at some point he told them his true name, and they like just misheard it and like started pronouncing it wrong. And so, and there's no reason, like, it totally makes sense in the trimming of a TV show to like cut all of those people out. That makes sense to me, but why did they keep the fucking nickname? Why is he running around calling himself Jopery? Like, what the hell?
He thought it sounded cool.
No, what I want to know is why they had to make him look like he was on an Assassin's Creed cover. Like, every time he comes up with that, like, big old hood over his head, I couldn't take him seriously.
Okay, here's what I got on this topic. Last season, one of my biggest complaints about last season was Lin-Manuel Miranda and his performance. I thought he was probably the weakest actor last season, and that includes the children. I was not a fan of how he was portraying Lee Scoresby. I have a lot of Lee Scoresby feelings because he is a surrogate father for Lyra. That is why. That is legitimately why I'm invested in the character and everything that he does. But the performance wasn't there. The decision to cast Lin-Manuel Miranda was questionable anyway. And I don't know if it's because now they paired Andrew Scott with Lin-Manuel Miranda, but I really did not like his performance of Jopery either. There was something like really over the top about it in a weird way, and he's already kind of a mumbler, but he was doing like this like growly mumbly thing that I was like, why is this happening? Why are we in this balloon right now with the two worst actors on the show? Yes. I don't want to be here anymore.
Well, I thought you were going to say with the whole lead up with Lin-Manuel Miranda, he's no longer my favorite actor for season two. Because the guy who does Perry is my least favorite character, which then made their scenes almost unbearable. Like, Lin-Manuel Miranda was still bringing like that weird stage energy, and then this guy, like, I felt like he just needed like a hacky sack, but he was like a philosophy major and an undergrad. Like, oh my God.
Yes.
I generally agree with almost all of that. Like, I think that I was so excited that when they cast Andrew Scott, was just like deeply disappointed with the reality. I will say, though, having Phoebe Waller-Bridge be his demon That made my Fleabag loving heart really happy. She didn't get to talk nearly as much as she should have because she was the only person I wanted to hear from in their scenes. So I feel like they needed to give her more dialogue and that would have helped their scenes or just like cut their scenes down. But Lin-Manuel Miranda's performance as Lee Scoresby grew on me a little bit when I rewatched, and then like going into this season, I feel like it feels like just a slightly different interpretation of the character than the one that I had in my head. I mean, not so much in the first season, but in the second season, the writing felt better suited to the more like he's bringing a like trickster energy to the character that isn't like, it's not like you couldn't read that, but it is definitely not the vibe that I got while reading the books, but like is very much the energy of Lin-Manuel Miranda's Lee Scoresby. And it felt in the second season like they wrote Lee Scoresby accordingly, and like they gave him more space to play the like the trickster version of that character. I don't know, it read better, but I agree that all the stuff with him and Andrew Scott, I was like, I love some of this stuff in the book, and I'm just like really unhappy that it's happening to me on my TV. All of that being said, though, I still sobbed when he died. Lee Scoresby's death, doesn't matter how many times I read the books, and probably it won't matter how many times I rewatch this show, Lee Scoresby's death is going to get me every time. I will never not cry when Lyra's surrogate dad dies.
Yeah, it's the surrogate dad thing. Like, I mean, immediately, I'm just so sad because there's so many things that are baked into the death that are just sad on their own. And one is that he's doing this whole thing, telling everybody who will listen that Lyra's like a daughter to him. And Lyra doesn't know. She doesn't know any of this. He's just out there in the world loving her and trying to protect her, being proud of her. Like, she's the best thing that has ever happened, and she has no idea. And the thing is that he's doing all of this, and the reason that he basically gave his life there was to get Lyra under the protection of the knife, and she already is.
The worst part about that was he made John Perry like promise that he would tell the bear to protect Lyra, and when he dies, he doesn't even have the decency to mention her once.
And the thing is that every time that Lee Scoresby brings it up and he's like, well, Lyra will be protected, right? And John Perry is like, everybody will be protected. That's not a promise, sir. Yes, that is exactly. Not a promise.
He's evading it every time. So we know he's lying. It's also it's always so tragic to get to his death too, because of the fact that he only remembers like as he's dying that he has the pine branch from Serafina, and like that moment was also just
correct. I weirdly didn't cry when he died, but I did get teary-eyed when he was in prison and Miss Coulter gives him the keys. Like their actual interaction was amazing when he was like goading her. He's just like, I know who you are, I know exactly what kind of person you are, because I'm that person too, but Lyra is so much better than either of us. And I was just like, oh, like that got me.
One of my other big complaints about season one was the use of the demons, or the lack of their presence in season one. And I to say something positive now, I do think that Lee Scoresby and Hester had maybe one of the better like demon person relationships on the show. And those final moments between them where not only are they saying goodbye, but her saying like, this is my fault, like, you know, and them talking about their dynamic when she as his soul like kind of stops him and brings reason, or when she pushes him on to adventure, like that whole thing, watching it happen, and then the final like lines of like, don't you go before me.
Yes.
Absolutely tears.
To mention another positive thing, I also want to sort of go back to the mention of Mrs. Coulter and Ruth Wilson, because
standing ovation.
Yeah, standing ovation. We in our prep for this episode, we have agreed that this is going to be a Ruth Wilson stan club. So that's your primer on what this next segment of the podcast is going to be like. Her scenes in this season are like where probably most of the changes happened, and they were all brilliant. Like, I loved every little thing that they added for her to do, the stuff with the specters, like in the books, we just like sort of catch up with her later after she's already got the specters doing her bidding and she murders a witch. And we're like, okay, that's a thing she can do. And it's fine because whatever, like this isn't her story. But I loved that we got to see that. And I think that all of the stuff that they are doing with her and her like really fucked up and broken relationship with the golden monkey is really important, like seeding for what is ultimately my favorite section of the third book. So I love all of the stuff that they gave her, and it really clearly serves a purpose. And also, like, that scene was just really impressive to look at. It was one of the most visually interesting scenes of the season, probably the most, because this season didn't have, you know, armored bears. was light on armored bears. So probably the most visually impressive thing we got was her controlling the specters. So I loved that. And also her meeting with Mary Malone.
Yes.
Oh my God. Just like there's so much going on there. And she acts it all beautifully. Like she has, you know, just a couple lines of dialogue. Most of it is just her face. But you can see it all. You can see her reacting to the life that she could have had if she had lived in a different world, and the person that she could have been if she had lived in a different world, and all of that. And like, granted, you know, her takeaway from that is to like, just be a worse person in her own world. is what she learns from that. But I digress. The point is, it was really, really beautifully done, and then followed by her going to Boreal's place, and the bit where everything, where she's like in his like, oh my God, his like rich bro collector basement.
Yes.
There's a bit where he's like trying to woo her with all of his expensive stuff, and like, and specifically his expensive sound system, and she is so unimpressed, and I died. That is the funniest scene in this entire season.
I agree. I actually wrote peak comedy in my notes about that. Yes, I mean, everything that she does, I was just enamored with her the entire time. But also, speaking of visuals, I was really impressed this time around the amount of emotion we were able to get in the CGI, especially with the golden monkey.
Yeah.
And this is also coming off of, like, a couple months ago, I rewatched The Polar Express, which is just a really horrendous Uncanny Valley, like, experiment. So, like, seeing really great digital emotion coming off of a fake animal was just so well done. But she has so many good moments. Like, there was when she's looking at Lee and she has like this beautiful like eye twitch, like you can just, she's controlling the rest of her face and there's just like this tiny eye twitch, and it was just like, she deserves every award.
It is also like just really compelling television, like apart from just the stunning performance, because we've got this like bigger world around Lyra and Will and all of these like villains basically, and the whole argument is like about good and evil, sin, you know, all of these things that are rather black and white, whether they exist that way in the story or not, but are just like these concepts that are a little black and white. And they just keep adding nuance and nuance and nuance on top of Mrs. Coulter. Like, mm-hmm. every part of what we find about her own like self-loathing, her love of Lyra, but then she puts her in a trunk, like the whole thing is just mm-hmm. like layer on top of layer. Every time she interacts with her demon, it's like another like piece that gets slotted in, and then you get all of these additional things about her seeing what life could have been like, and you get the sense that this is all what it comes down to with this character, is that she wanted to live a certain kind of life, and because of her own actions, because of the world that she grew up in and all of that, she never got there. Bring it full circle around to her now believing she has to keep Lyra kind of pristine, untouched, can't fall. And it's just like one of the more nuanced sort of characterizations in the story. I love what it does for like the overall season. I know and to echo Nicole's point, yes, it is true, we needed to spend more time with the kids, but cut every other adult and leave Mrs. Coulter alone, because I think that is where the writing and the storytelling is really shining right now when it comes to the adult is sort of her characterization.
Yeah, I could have done with less of her real life father, Daddy Keen. What is he, a Cardinal MacPhail now? All of the magistrate stuff, I was like, I get why you're telling me this. I don't think we fully need all of it. That said, again, going back to Mari's plus, though, I'm so glad we got to see everyone's demons now. Like, everyone's demons were present.
I think it's because there weren't as many bears, so the CG budget, there was, like, the CGI was reallocated. It was like, okay, we don't have to do the bears this season, so y'all get more demon screen time. Speaking of wanting less of the adults, I had mixed feelings about the very fact that, like, you know, there's one less episode in the season because, you know, I love this show. I want there to be more of it. But also the fact that the one episode that they got is a Lord Asriel episode, I was like, okay. But I'm really curious to know what, like, how they're going to work around that. The thing is, you can't cut it entirely because the stuff that I assume is happening in that episode is like stuff that happens at the beginning of the third book, and they probably moved it back here both for the sake of making sure that their very famous actor was in this season and also because that would have been, I don't know, maybe a more like big epic end to the season. That's my guess as to the reasons why that episode probably was originally slated to go into this season rather than next season. But I don't know. I am very, very curious to find out what happens, because there are a bunch of people that Lyra and Will meet, and unfortunately we do have to meet them through Lord Asriel. So that is how they get introduced. So I don't know. It'll be really interesting to see what they do with that.
I also think that there is probably like storytelling missing here. And I realized it when I was putting together the plot summary, where it wasn't till the end where I was like, oh yeah, because like the whole thing is that there's a war going on.
Yes.
And they do mention it, like multiple people say, the witches say there's a war coming, we got to help Lord Asriel. And there's mentions of the authority, sprinkle in some angels. But I feel like that there's something missing to really tie all of those things together, because we're getting these mentions of it, but nobody has said in so many words, they're trying to fight God, which is like a really big deal in this whole like storytelling. So as much as I too am very happy we did not get that episode this season, I also feel like probably we need it. Needed to tell the story.
Uh-huh. The season is in fact worse for it, as much as it pains me to admit it.
Correct.
Yeah, I feel like all of the extra explanation has been coming from the witches so far. I made a note that Serafina's demon gives like the prophecy talk like three separate times, because I also rewatched the first season and he's always the one explaining there's a prophecy like every time. And yeah, and like the witches are always the ones talking about war, and we always hear Serafina talking about like, I need to follow Lyra. I wonder if they're going to make that a little bit more of a natural like interplay with the rest of the story for season three.
It's just like, it is, he is like the key though. he is the like central point. I mean, I will say, if they do end up just moving that whole Lord Asriel episode to the third season, the one plus side is that it means looking at James McAvoy in like nerdy sweaters, which is okay with me. I just have to think less about it being Lord Asriel. Just focus on that. I don't know, because I don't know how you could feel the lack of that in this season. Like there, and I think it's also probably part of why all of the adult stuff ended up falling flat. I mean, all of the non-Ruth Wilson adult stuff is because it lacked that central thread. It was only being connected by way of these really heavy-handed, you know, explanations, like Serafina's demon telling us, here is, remember, Lyra is the chosen one. Okay. I'll be back in four scenes to remind you again.
Right. I will say that in the books, I'm not like not a fan, but Mary Malone is like not my favorite character, and her scenes that are coming up I've always like struggled to really be invested in, so I didn't have a lot of expectations when it came to her. But I love Serafina Pecola in the books. I don't know, she's not even like really in them as much, but I just love every one of her scenes, and that has completely flip-flopped on me in this in the TV series. I loved Mary Malone throughout this. I did feel like sometimes her scenes were a little quieter or, you know, a little slower, but she had several that I was just like so invested in. Her interactions with Lyra I thought were really neat, because I think that you immediately see that she's got this like motherly protection thing about her immediately, but also she's just like so curious about everything that's happening. So the balance was really good. And meanwhile, all the witch stuff, it looks cool sometimes, but I'm bored. I'm bored.
Yeah.
And I wish it were better.
I would like to add an addendum to my previous statement about what adult scenes can stay. And that is also all the Mary Malone scenes. Mrs. Coulter and Mary Malone can stay. If they're not in the scene and it's adults, it can go. That's my new edit for this season.
Yeah, we don't need those. I realized pretty quickly into this season that I do not remember the Subtle Knife book the way I remember the Golden Compass and the Amber Spyglass. So there were a lot of things where I was just like, oh, you do exist. Okay. Like Mary Malone was one of them. Completely forgot about her as a character, but I love the way she was played. And I think curious is the right word, Maddie. Like every time you just see her like looking at Lyra and just being so like, wow, what a cool child. Listen to that brain working. I'm like, yes. And when she hugs Paola.
Stop it. Oh my goodness. Too much.
The thing about Mary Malone in the books is that she is a character, like I never disliked her. Like I always liked her as a character. I was always invested in her stuff. But the more I reread the books, like the older that I get, the more that I'm like, you know, hey, that's the character. If I'm any of these characters, it's not one of the fucking children. It's the adult woman. But I, you know, so I'm sure there are lots of reasons for this, but her scenes grow on me so much each time I reread the books and, you know, get older. So I really appreciated seeing her. I also really appreciated the cave, like seeing the cave. That was really, really cool, just because, well, it's like absolutely not at all what I would have pictured, but like, I don't know, like that was just like really cool and exciting to just see a thing that I had no real visual conception of, and it was cool to see that brought to life. Also, it was in the intro sequence. And I didn't notice it until, like, it was in the intro sequence starting at the beginning of the season. So it's there. And then once you see it, you're like, oh, that's what that was. And that's fun.
Okay. We said this in the season one episode, but it bears repeating. The intro sequence is beautiful. I love it so much.
Yes.
But in general, just shout out to the visuals. I think that Chittagatse was like really well done. And the look of it was really interesting. And like how it was, you know, very obviously like a beautiful place, but very creepily abandoned was really good. And there's something like very muted almost about the look of the series as a whole, but I think it works so well with sort of the darker tones of the series. So yeah, I just wanted to make sure that we mentioned that this is also really wonderful to look at.
Yeah, no, it feels very obviously like Mediterranean, which I also love the idea that if you cut between two different Englands, you end up in Italy. Like, what a great idea. Makes no sense at all, but I'm so here for it.
Global warming happened a lot faster there, okay, in that world, because of the specters. The specters brought us global warming. Ergo, that's what London looks like.
Totally. But I like that, yeah, the architecture changes. And again, I mentioned it in season one, the costumes. In Chittagatse, everyone's pretty much wearing like linens, which they are not wearing in the other two worlds so much. There's more like starchy and structured things, like very middle century looking stuff, like when we're in Lyra's world.
A lot of like wool, like heavy wool fabrics in Lyra's world.
Yes. And then in Will's, it's obviously like super modern, like they're wearing just regular clothes. I appreciate that all of these worlds like have completely different looks to them, and then people have to adapt to them very differently.
That is highlighted so much when we have that scene of Mrs. Coulter like picking up a pair of like jeans or whatnot, or trying on different clothes. And even just the subtle way that she does her hair, like slicks it a little bit more to blend in. It was like such a treat because it highlights that we've been seeing these different worlds and these different costumes, but putting them against each other that way, you're like, oh, okay. Like, this is a big difference. And you can tell it on her. She looks so different.
We haven't talked about Boreal yet, and he's a big part of this season.
Well, we talked about how he we talked about his important moment of comedy, his contribution to the most comedic moment of the show. But yeah, he's also a major source of change too, because he's like a nothing player really in the books. He's, you know, we see him at the party, and then we see him again when he steals the alethiometer, and then that's it. And the show has him doing a lot more. Like, I think it was smart in the first place to like have him, you know, to like show him going between worlds, because he obviously would have been doing that all along anyway. So like, it's smart that they, you know, had him be this the bridge, doing all of these adding all of these extra pieces. But I don't really have a lot to say. Like, I think the actor is doing a good job, but I also feel the same way about him as I do about all of the adults, which is to say that if the kids or Mrs. Coulter aren't present, then I'm not interested.
Jocelyn, you asked the question, you know the answer. No adults.
I mean, yeah, no, that's totally fair. But also, like, the only things that I cared about him were when he was with Mrs. Coulter, and like his arrogance against her. She kept putting him in his place, and dude was not understanding it. Like, there there was one point where I wrote down her quote, which was, "You wouldn't begin to know what to do with me," when she was like talking about, like, I guess them being in a relationship or something. And like, he was like, okay, cool, I guess I'll just hit on you tomorrow. Like, what?
Yes, truly incredible. And the scene where he dies as well, also like as an extension of that, that moment, just like the degree to which he does not understand
that he is about to die. Yes.
So taken aback. It was really great to see.
I do also want to add my other bit, like my other important petty grievance. There are probably more, but there were two that I wanted to make sure I included. The first one was Jopari. The second one is another like change. Eshadar, I don't even know how you pronounce it. The name of the knife. The other name that the knife gets, it's the name of the seventh episode. It's the secret, like, even in the context of the show, okay? Taking all the book stuff away. In the context of the show, everybody keeps mentioning it and saying it's the secret name for the secret knife. Well, how do all these fucking people know the secret name for the secret knife? Like, there's a person in every world to explain the secret name for the secret knife. And I just, I don't know. And it's also disappointing because it undermines, like, the big reveal, which is, like, what that means, like, the fact that that means Godkiller. Like, I just, I don't know. It was just really, really frustrating to me that everybody keeps calling it that, because Lyra and Will are never going to call it that. It's just the knife. So, like, I just, why? Why? Every time somebody said it, I got mad.
The other thing about the knife that I thought was also, like, not great was that very conveniently placed, like, info dump at the beginning of the fourth or fifth episode that was, like, the subtle knife is... And I was like, where the heck... And it wasn't even that it was, like, an info dump at the beginning of the episode, but it was that this has never happened before, like, in any of the episodes. It was so jarring to just, like, serve this information to us in that manner. Did not like,
especially when they made the scene with Will and the previous bearer as long as they did. Like, they dragged that out, like, and that's that is where Lyra and Will learn that information. Like, that's the whole thing is, the, why? You had an opportunity to let the audience learn that information with our characters. Why?
Wasn't that voiceover by Serafina's demon again?
Probably.
I didn't have that down in my petty grievance corner because that one is not petty. That one is like an actual, like, that was bad storytelling. To open the episode with an info dump, that's that. And like, that's also part of how, like, going into, if you ever watch the Golden Compass movie, like, part of how you know it's bad is that it begins with an extended info dump. Like, that is never, it's never a good sign.
And otherwise, the pacing works, I think, really well for this season. Like, it, the episodes flow very freely. Like, you understand where they're going and how they're getting there every episode. But when they do have those, like, random info dumps, they are so, so messy.
And even without understanding or really having, like, the common thread of, like, oh, this is a war against God, I feel like that there were enough stakes episode to episode, but that just comes because, you know, we have children make characters and they're in danger all the time. Mm-hmm. So I feel like even during the quieter moments and the moments that aren't, let's say, armored bear fights or whatnot, I'm still so tense, so like on the edge of my seat, because like it's just about them and them being in danger. So that really helps the pace along episode to episode.
The bit when they were stealing back the alethiometer, I was so stressed. Partially I was stressed because I was afraid that I genuinely, even, you know, like as a person who knows how that scene like ends in the books, I wasn't sure if they were gonna collapse and make that the moment that Mrs. Coulter abducts her. Watching that scene, I was extremely tense, so stressed out, much like in a horror movie. I'm like yelling at Will when he closes the window behind him, like, don't do it. But it makes sense because Will is like such a conscientious kid that like he was told this is one of the rules, you close the windows. And like, you know, that's a Lyra wouldn't have done that, but Will would, like closing the window behind him. And like, so like, I love it. It makes a ton of sense. And the build up to the full circle moment of Lyra echoing what Mrs. Coulter did to her in the previous season. Mm-hmm. And like, and the way, like just the ways in which part of a really big and important part of her journey is, you know, reckoning with these ideas about like who our parents are and how, what role that has in who we become, and like her, how she is deciding that she doesn't want to be like her mother, that like that is not who she wants to be. That scene was so stressful and also so good.
That was the point in the season that I cried, was just after like that fight, because then we also get such great moments between Will and Lyra. And again, like these children are acting around every other adult except Ruth Wilson in the show. But then having this moment of Will being like fully understanding, like, oh, that's your mom? Like, my mom has never wanted to hurt me. Like, this is a different, like, I don't understand this.
Yeah, there were a lot of, like, really great small coming-of-agey moments throughout. And I think that that is, well, a big one, where she's literally, like, mirroring something her mother did to her and then later deciding that did not feel good and I don't want to do that. But there were other moments, like when she tells Pan, like, I'm changing and I feel it and I'm really scared and I don't want you to stop changing. I just I didn't cry at that moment, but I just had that like swell of emotions for her, especially because, you know, Will is like walking ahead of them and looking back. And they're the other like really neat like interaction stuff besides just Will and Lyra was like Will and Pan.
Yes.
And seeing them interact and him kind of figure it out, but because he doesn't have any of the social norms in place. Right. So he doesn't know he can't touch Pan, but then Pan kind of lets him. And so them also getting to know each other and like Lyra's soul getting to trust Will and all of that was just so beautiful. And the scene where Lyra's pretending to be asleep and Pan is like, you know, you're her best friend too. I love it so much.
I just remembered another thing about my knife complaining that I want to make sure I include. I'm not done. I wasn't done, you guys.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
They tell us that the knife is making the specters rather than letting us learn that information at a plot relevant time.
Right.
And I hate that. I hate it. Just everything about that knife stuff is just so tragically info dumpy in like the most unnecessary way. Like it didn't, there are moments to tell us that without this weird like pre-episode novel that they gave us.
Especially in a season that is supposed to be all about, well, it's based on the book where the knife is the linchpin, right?
Right, right.
And I think, I mean, they missed it kind of in the first season too, where I don't think that they gave the alethiometer sort of like its due and its importance and what it means to Lyra either. So to get here and now we have the knife. And again, they keep telling us how important this knife is and the knife, everybody wants the knife, but they don't let it happen naturally. So we sort of learn with the characters like, ooh, the knife is really important. And, you know, the knife is also like a big piece of all of this. I don't have a lot of hope for the Amber spyglass.
Oh my god. Yeah. Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no.
And like, well, I guess we'll see.
And with the alethiometer too, I was hoping that they would give us more in this season. And that was one thing where I was just like, oh, the alethiometer just became Google, because several characters at certain points just be like, Lyra, what does the alethiometer say? And she'd be like, okay, back in 2 seconds, let me. And it was just like, it just felt like she was taking out her phone and Googling it, like, I got the answer, guys, this is what we have to do.
Yeah. And I mean, that is very much like how it plays out in the books too, but I do think that like one unfortunate consequence of the way that they used it in the show, like they were trying to use it more sparingly to avoid that, and that I understand, but I think that it is missing something to not have more pushback in those moments, like to not get the ways in which the alethiometer is also kind of bossing her around, that like it'll answer her question and then be like, okay, but listen, bitch, you have a mission, like focus.
Right.
That like the thing that you're asking me about, that is not what you should be asking me about right now. I don't know, like not getting that sort of, I think that getting more of that pushback would have also helped alleviate the ways in which it feels like Google.
Right, because it's not just a search result. Like, it's talking to her.
Yes.
But Google, we're not.
Google never shames me for my searches. I guess, like, the place to wrap this up then is to talk about, like, what we're, like, hoping for, what we're looking forward to in the third season, because I assume everybody here is planning on watching the third season. Is there anything that you're really excited to see?
The next couple worlds they go into.
Yes.
That's a good way of answering that question. As soon as the words were out of my mouth, I was like, huh, I don't actually know how to answer that question in a way that isn't spoilery for people who are just watching the show.
Mm-hmm. Also, knowing now that Lyra's back with her mother, just getting that dynamic again and seeing kind of how that all develops, because it will be more Mrs. Coulter and like this other now more motherly side of her as well. Big plus one on the next few worlds that they go into. Mm-hmm. And then now that I'm a Mary Malone stan, I'm like, yes, we get so much Mary Malone. hopefully, stick to that.
This is the thing too, is like the world that Mary Malone is headed to, I am so intrigued to see how they do it. I'm a little bit worried that we're gonna get not that much of it, that they're gonna have to scale it back, because it's gonna be expensive to make the place where she's going. I guess is all I can say about that.
Well, say goodbye to the demons.
Right. Yeah. I hope you enjoyed all the time we got with Pan this season, because not so much in the next. I guess Pan, we'll probably still get a lot of Pan, but everybody else's demons are gone. Nobody else gets to have a demon in the third season. Oh well.
Welcome to the real world.
You know, we've learned that we don't get to have nice things anymore, so it makes sense. Mm-hmm. And on that note, that brings us to the end of another episode of Snark Squad Pod, bringing you some real 2021 energy here. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Jocelyn for joining us. If you are enjoying this podcast, you can join our community on Patreon at patreon.com/snarksquad. We would love to hear all of your thoughts on this episode. There will be a post dedicated to it on snarksquad.com, or you can find us on Twitter at snark_squad. I am at Sweeney Says.
You can find me at My Name is Marines.
And I'm at Jossaraptor.
This show is a Snark Squad production, edited by me, and the music is by Stefan Chin.